Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And good morning. This is J. Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. You can be the very first caller on this kind of gray Memorial Day weekend at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning. How are you doing on this rainy Saturday?
Hey, it's rainy, but at least it's Saturday, right?
That's true. At least it's Saturday, right? At least if it's cold out, we don't have to get out early to go to work.
That's true. And so those of you that are listening to the radio and like wondering what you could do today, you know, you could curl up on your couch and you could go to our website and you could watch our webinars.
Absolutely, that's a great thing to do. Catch up on some ones you haven't seen already. Share it with your family if you want to watch it with them, right?
That's it. Yeah, I mean it's a great opportunity if you're kind of stuck with your family inside. Like, what are we going to do? That we can go to the Herzog Law Firm website. You can click on there and we can watch the webinars. And when we're talking about webinars, we do webinars every week that are live on Wednesdays during the month. We do two webinars. We've got one coming up on Wednesday, June 2nd. 10 a.m. is Aging in Place, and 2 p.m. is How to Plan Your Estate. So those are the two that are on this week, and then we have a week of webinars that's later on in the month where we have a webinar every day at 2 in the afternoon. That's the week of June 21st. But if you're not available during those times or you're hoping for a sunny day and you would like to watch the webinars, a lot of them have been recorded and they're on our website. So it's kind of like Netflix, right? You can go get your snacks, get your coffee or your hot chocolate or whatever. I can't believe it's like Memorial Day. I'm talking about hot chocolate. But anyway, and you can sit and watch the webinars. So
that's right. And that was about 40, what was it, in the 40s this morning, which is pretty cold.
It is, but, you know, it's supposed to kind of clear up this afternoon, and then I was looking at the weather for Sunday and Monday, and it's like rain, rain, rain. I'm like, maybe I should get out and do something well.
That's right, well, it's not clear off.
Yeah, looks like noon. Looks like noon, it's going to clear off and be 50, so it's like run out and quickly get done whatever you're going to get done.
So, that's right, that's part of the weekend.
Yeah, so give us a call here. You could be our first caller, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So any interesting client meetings this week, Jamie Marie?
Oh, plenty of interesting client meetings. Well, I was meeting with someone yesterday, and I just wanted to, you know, they were asking me about long-term care insurance and, you know, whether I thought it was a good idea or not. And then I wanted to point out something that some people do. If you don't have a trust, right, and you're going to set up a trust and there's a five-year look-back period, you're kind of uncovered for those 5 years, right? So what some people do is they buy long-term care insurance, but they don't necessarily keep it. So they could buy it and just have it for the 5 years and then cancel it. Or you could buy long-term care insurance that just covers home care. So that kind of cover, I mean, it doesn't cover you if you go in a nursing home, but there's many different options. When you buy long-term care insurance, you can kind of choose and select what you need to make it fit your situation.
Right, if you can't afford a huge policy. I have a lot of people that already have long-term care insurance, and because the rates have gone up so huge, they're like, you know, we can't afford this based on our budget. So we're going to go ahead, do a trust, protect our assets. And as soon as our 5 years is up, we're going to cancel our long-term care insurance.
Yeah, that's right. So these clients they had never really thought about that before. So I just wanted to point that out to our clients that you can use both, right, to kind of protect yourselves. And you don't have to, like, just do the trust and then say, all right, well, the next 5 years I would have to, you know, spend half my money. I'm not protected. You could kind of combine the two and get yourself fully protected.
True. That's a great option. And a lot of people don't think about that. I wanted to mention one of the funnier appointments I had this week. It was a brother and sister that came in to meet about their parent. And he said, well, I have a power of attorney. Okay. And he said, I did it on one of the legal websites. And I went, okay. So he hands it to me. And I look at the power of attorney, and by, you know, the letters that are on the power of attorney that enable the person, the agent that you've appointed to do certain things like real estate or chattel or whatever. The person doing the power of attorney, the parent, and the two people that they had appointed all initialed each one of them.
Oh, no.
So I looked at it and I started laughing, and he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, yeah, this is not a valid document. And I said, have you given me a great thing to talk about on the radio this weekend?
Yeah, that's right.
And then he just turned bright red, and I'm like, don't worry, I won't use your name. And his sister goes, oh, go ahead. I had nothing to do with it. You should definitely use his name. Anyway, I was like, no, I would never do that.
You won't embarrass him on the radio, but right.
No, but that's the thing. It's like people don't realize. They go online and they see, oh, here, go ahead, just download this form. Well, we're going to charge you like $75. I think he said he paid $85 for it. He downloaded this form with the instructions, and then they actually got someone to notarize the signatures, so that part was valid, but it wasn't a valid power of attorney. So you kind of wasted that money by not going to a professional, you know?
Right, because you can find forms online, but they don't, you know, come with instructions. You can certainly do it wrong, you know. I thought you were going to say maybe he had the old form that was, sometimes people come in with the pre-2010 powers of attorney. I guess they still can find them online. And they're not valid anymore, right? So you can run into a lot of problems when you try and do your own power of attorney online.
Yeah, this one wasn't even state specific.
Oh, that's even worse. Yeah, that's not going to work in New York.
No, definitely not. And there's changes that they're supposed to have a new form for June for the new power of attorney, aren't they?
Yes, they are. The mid-June is the effective date for the new power of attorney. You know, we have an idea of what it's going to look like. It's strange, though, they haven't put out the official form yet, and we're only 2 weeks away, you know. we have the statute, and we'll be ready to have the new power of attorney going in June. But the good thing about it is that it's going to be shorter. Ours is currently 14 pages long, and it's really complicated. And this week I had to go to the hospital one day to have a client sign the power of attorney. I mean, and it's hard if you're, you know, sick or you're weak or you're not doing well, and you have to try and sign a 14-page document. I always feel bad for the people trying to do that. So I think it'll be better if it's a shorter document.
Definitely. And people that did theirs prior to the changes in the power of attorney law last time, because they changed it in 2009 and then changed it again in 2010. If you got those really old documents, you may want to think about updating them if you did them prior to 2009, 2010. Because we're really getting a lot of pushback from a lot of the banking institutions and financial institutions that are saying, yeah, this is not any good anymore.
Right, which isn't true, but they just don't like the old ones. You know, they want to know that it's updated. Sometimes they'll ask you to get a certificate or a letter from the lawyer saying that the power of attorney is still valid. So, you know, power of attorney is just as easy to get a new one done to show that it's, you know, still what your wishes are. And when we review them with people, anyway, oftentimes, you know, the address is changed or maybe one of their children moved, so they want to pick another child who's close by. So when you update it, that sometimes there's reasons to update it just to get everything in order.
Right. The people that I met with yesterday, it was different ones. Had a lot of power of attorney issues this week. The daughter brought her dad in, and mom is in the hospital, and she brought the power of attorney in, and I looked at it, and I said, you're number two. And she's like, what? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, so mom's number one. She was like, well, we can redo dad's. That's not a problem. I said, but mom's would be more difficult to do because dad was mom's and the daughter has basically taken over everything. And she goes, well, I want to be her power of attorney, but she was not on the mother's power of attorney. So we may have to go to the hospital to do mom's new power of attorney just so the daughter can take care of both mom and dad. And you know, it's one of those situations where if you have an aging parent, and even if they have each other as power of attorney, they would have to resign, or if they pass away, then the next person steps up. So a lot of times what I'll suggest is, you know, mom and dad can appoint each other, but maybe it's an or, right, or their child, so that if mom or dad can't act for each other anymore, that child's already appointed.
Yes, I definitely recommend that because then you don't have to try and get the parent to resign. It's easier if it's an or, you know. But you have to look at them and update them. So I had a situation where we're doing a Medicaid application, and we met with the son and for the parent, and he's the one who's been handling everything. But then you look on the power of attorney, and it's his sister who's the power of attorney. But the sister is okay with him doing everything. I mean, she's like, I guess he has more time. She's like, fine, you do everything. But we're like, well, you're still legally the power of attorney, so either you have to sign everything or we have to try and get in the nursing home and have dad sign a new power of attorney. And, you know, lately it's been hard to get in the nursing homes and hospitals. It's starting to open up a little bit. I've been in, you know, two or three times now, so... you know, so you have to, that's why you have to update your power of attorney every couple of years, right? If they had reviewed it and said, okay, you know, the sister was the power of attorney, but maybe she's, you know, moved or she's busy with work and we should make it the brother, that would have made it easier.
Right. Give us a call. You know, if you don't want to talk about powers of attorney, we're okay with that. We can talk about something else. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. I think a lot of people are sleeping in today on this beautiful gray day, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's so cold and wet. You feel like it's winter, so you're probably sleeping in.
Yeah, when I was coming to the, because I do the radio show from the office here in Saratoga, when I was coming up, I usually cut through Union, but they had these big signs flashing that there was horse crossing, and I thought, I wonder if there's something going on at the track. Maybe I'll take the other route just in case I don't. I mean, it's beautiful to sit there and watch the horses go by, but if you've got a lot of them that are working out, you could be there for 15, 20 minutes just watching the horses.
Well, that's right. So they're going to have a full track season, right, this year? That's good.
I know. That's going to be awesome. It's always, the horses are so beautiful, and it's always nice to go to the track just to people watch and horse watch.
Yes, that's right. That's fun. Even if you don't want any money, it's fun.
Sorry to interrupt, right, ladies, but we do have a caller this morning, Megan in Clifton Park.
Good morning, Megan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. So I had a question. We bought a house. Well, actually, my husband bought a house when we were just dating. And the deed and the mortgage is all in his name. And now that we're married and we live together in it, I was wondering if something happened to him, like how would that work with the house?
So I was going to ask you a question. Does he have any children or do you have any children together?
No, we do not.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, if something happened to him, you know, as his wife, you would be entitled to it, but it wouldn't automatically pass to you. You would have to go to probate court, and either if he has a will, probate the will, or if he doesn't have a will, you'd have to do a proceeding to have the house transferred to you. So really, it's much easier if he can redo the deed and put you on the deed. If you join the deed with him, then it automatically passes to you upon his death. Okay. And I've seen, you know, we've seen a lot of couples do that where it was in one person's name and they kind of forget to do that, you know. But it's good that you're asking about that, because if you can go fix that and add your name onto the deed, it's much easier than having to go to court later on.
Okay. But if so, say if we didn't, it would just eventually pass through like the whole probate process?
It would. So what happens with the probate process, well, either he should do a will, right, to leave it to you. If he doesn't get to do a will, there's something called intestacy law. And under the intestacy law, your spouse is going to inherit. But here's a little trick to that, though. If you have children, it only goes half to the spouse and half to the children. So that's probably not what you would want. So whether or not applies to you or not. But so it's really better to have it just go to you. So either by putting your name on the deed or by doing a will that says it just goes to you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Take care.
You too. Bye.
You know, Jean Marie, it's an interesting question. I had a situation years ago where the father and son came to me because mom had passed away and the deed was only in mom's name because the husband was in a business that they were afraid they were going to get sued, right? So the house was individually in mom's name, no will. Mom passed away. There was a husband and two kids. There was the son and then there was the evil daughter. Anyway, so whenever mom passed, the son was like, oh, dad, it's your house. You know, I have no problem deeding it over to you. And the evil daughter was like, no, I want my peace. Oh. I want my money out of the house. She actually took her father to court to get,
right.
I know, to get her money from the house. And, you know, they came in to do dad's estate planning because they're like, yeah, we don't want this to happen again. And he ended up selling the house, giving her her money. Obviously, they're not really close now, but, you know, these things happen and people just assume that if you're married, that stuff's going to go to you, but it's not necessarily so.
Right. No, it's not. That intestacy law really surprises a lot of people. And yeah, hopefully most children don't do that, but you know, honestly, she did have the right to do that. You know, it was awful, but that's what the law says, you know? So the easiest way to fix that is to just get a will done. They call them, I love you wills, right? It's all to my spouse. If my spouse survives me, and then if my spouse doesn't survive me, then to my children. And that's a really easy fix.
Yeah, it's a very easy fix. That was a great question. So if you want to be our second caller, you can give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. You have to be really careful whenever you're dealing with real property. And I had a situation, I get all of the fun ones. Anyway, so the son came to me and his dad had passed away. His parents were divorced. And when they got divorced, the house was not worth anything. Basically, it was upside down, right? So husband and wife were both on the mortgage. And then when they got divorced, the divorce decree said that he could stay in the house for 2 years. He had to refinance it. He had to make all the payments. But she was still on the mortgage. Okay, so fast forward, he didn't refinance. And she said, I don't want anything to do with the house anymore. So she goes, I went off the deed. So she deeded her portion to him, right? Mm-hmm. And now that he's passed, she doesn't own the house, but she's still on the mortgage.
Oh, that's a pretty bad result, right?
Yeah, and you know, she's like, well, my divorce documents will protect me. And we're like, yeah, no, they won't, because you're on a mortgage. And, you know, if the bank forecloses on the mortgage, you're responsible to make the payments now, whether or not you're on the deed.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely should consult with a lawyer before you do these things because you don't know about these unintended consequences. Right?
Yeah, so it's not a good situation. So that's the thing. And people think they can just go down to the county clerk, right? They go to the county clerk and they're like, okay, so I want to add my new wife to my deed. The county clerk's going to go, okay, go hire an attorney.
That's right. It's not that easy, right? You have to actually do a deed, right? And you can't do that yourself.
Yeah. Exactly.
Ladies, we do have another caller on the line right now. We have Barb in Albany.
Good morning, Barb.
Good morning. You mentioned earlier on your show about a new power of attorney form. I just had my power of attorney done 2 years ago, and everything is still current on the form, but with the new form coming out, do I need to have it redone?
No, if it's 2 years old. Yeah.
Go ahead, Devin.
Okay. if it's only 2 years old, it's not a big deal. It's going to be grandfathered in, and everything's current, so it shouldn't be an issue. If you have one that you did before 2009, we definitely need to update those. But if you just did it, it shouldn't be an issue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend.
You're welcome. You have a great weekend, too. So what are your thoughts on that, Jay Marie?
I wouldn't, you don't have to redo it, you know. Same thing when that happened in 2009. The old ones were still valid. But the new one is shorter. So you may want to think about that. You know, it's just maybe easier to use going forward. You know, your agent doesn't have to carry around a 14-page document in their purse with them. Yeah. It may be easier to like send to different places so they can see it. You don't have to redo it, but it's a good time to look at your old power of attorney, make sure you what the powers were in there, because you have a lot of choices in the current power of attorney, and see if all the choices you selected were still valid, you know, or if you want to change any of them. So if you wanted to change any of that, now it would be a good time to do it on the new form.
Great advice, ladies. We actually have another call coming in right now with a couple of questions. Mike in Colony.
Mike?
Yes, good morning.
What can we help you with?
Tell me about these hearings that people have to have when they seek Medicare. Have you handled any of these hearings?
Go ahead, Jay Marie.
Yeah, sure. So a Medicare hearing or a Medicaid hearing?
Medicaid. Yes, Medicaid.
Okay. There's a lot of questions here because there's lots of different types of Medicaid hearings. I mean, generally, you're going to do a Medicaid hearing if you were denied Medicaid for some reason. Usually, yes. It's because you have too much money or you made a gift. Or your income.
We're seeking assistance for my wife who has got dementia and needs home care and is receiving home care, which we are paying for.
Mm-hmm. You're paying for the home care. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So have you applied for Medicaid?
Yes, we have. And waiting for the hearing.
Why do you know why you were denied Medicaid?
No, we don't know. They never told us the first time.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you go to the hearing, and it's hard to just say without knowing why you were denied.
You don't go to a hearing. It's done over the telephone.
That's true. You're not in person, right? Generally, it's probably because if it's home care, Medicaid, maybe the income or the assets are too high. That's why they denied you.
That can't be our reason.
Okay. If it's home Medicaid, they're not looking at gifts or transfers. If you're not sure, I would say give us a call on Monday and send us a copy of the notice, and we could look at that with you and try and figure it out. Okay.
Okay.
Medicaid usually has to have a reason why they denied you, and then we could look at it and see what your argument would be against that.
How do we find out the reason we were denied the first time?
You can ask the Medicaid office for the reason why they usually send you a notice that says why it's been denied.
Okay.
So you would, if you don't have that notice, you could call them and ask for it before the hearing. You're entitled to know why you were denied the Medicaid.
And if we do get Medicaid assistance, how do they determine how much we would be allowed?
Oh, there's statutory amounts that you're allowed to keep. So there's an income amount and there's an asset amount, and there's certain exemptions that go into that. And also, because you're married, there's a different amount that, you know, the spouse who is receiving Medicaid can keep, and there's another amount for the spouse who's not receiving Medicaid.
How about if we're separated? We've been separated for 12 years, and we're seeking assistance for my wife.
If you're not divorced, they're still going to look at your assets and income. So separated, Medicaid doesn't only cares if you're divorced or not.
All right.
Are you working with an attorney to do this, or are you doing it on your own?
Doing it on our own.
That may be the problem. I hate to say that, but doing it on your own, especially because you just told us that you're separated, just because people are separated, they're still going to, like Jamie said, they're still going to count your assets and her assets, and probably, and I don't know this for a fact, that's probably the issue you were denied because of the way the assets are set up. So what you might want to do is give our office a call on Tuesday morning and kind of talk to us and figure out what's going on. The other thing you could do, and this sounds really odd, but we have a webinar that's on our website that's called Aging in Place that kind of walks you through community Medicaid and what assets you're allowed to keep and what income you're allowed to keep. And that might be something that you could get some pointers from.
Okay.
So, you know, that might be something to give you kind of a heads up, because it's very difficult for us to diagnose anything over the phone when we don't know exactly what's going on. And you kind of saying that you guys are separated and you're applying kind of gives us a hint as to why we think maybe you're going to have a hearing.
Okay, I understand. Now, when I call the number, what's the number I call?
The office is 518-465-7581.
And who should I ask for?
Stacy is our scheduler, and Stacy can figure out what attorney is available to do a quick phone call with you and go over everything. And then probably what we would ask you to do is fax over or scan an email over the document where you got denied, so that we would have some place to go from at that point in time to advise you.
Okay, your name?
I'm Debbie, and Jane Marie, we're two of the attorneys at the firm. There's also Dave and Harry. So, like I said, Stacy will look to see who's available to give you a call.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No problem. You have a great weekend.
As should you.
Thanks for calling in, Bill. Ladies, we do have to take a short break here, and we have another caller waiting on the line, so let's get to it. We'll be back with that in just a moment.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. This is Debbie Verney.
And this is Jane Marie Schaefer.
and we're two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. And I hear we have another caller on the phone. We have Bill from... Good morning, Bill.
Can you hear me?
Yes, what can we help you with?
I apologize. I'm sorry. I did not know if you could help me out. I have a piece of property that I need to sell, and it's in the title is in, or deed is in, both my mother, who's passed away about 3 years ago's name, and myself. And I did not know if there is any method or whatever that needs to be prepared prior to selling the property in a situation like this.
Well, so you said it's in your name and your mother's name, right?
That's correct.
So there's two ways you can hold title with someone, and one is it's called joint tenants with right of survivorship, and that would mean when your mom passed, it went automatically to you. The other way you could hold title, it's not as common, but it would be as tenants in common, which would mean she owned her half and you own your half separately. So I don't know if you know which one it was.
Unfortunately, but I don't.
Okay. It's probably more common that it's joint with right of survivorship, and you can always check the deed afterwards or, call us and we can look at the deed for you. If it is joint tenants with right of survivorship, that means it automatically became yours upon her death. So you wouldn't really have to do anything before the sale. When you sell the property, you just have to show her death certificate and to prove that you're the sole owner now. If it was the other way, which I said is a little more uncommon, then you separately, well, then what that means is she separately owned her half, and you would have to, either look at her will or whatever to see who it goes to and have it, if you're the only child, it would go to you, but you may have to do a probate or you may have to do an affidavit. It's a little bit more complicated that way.
Okay. That best scenario would be to get a copy of the deed and get in touch with you folks then.
Absolutely. We can look at it and tell you which way it is. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your guidance.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. And you can be our very next caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. It's difficult whenever people inherit property and they don't know how they hold it.
That's right. It is difficult. And, it doesn't always state it so clearly. Sometimes it doesn't say, and then there's a default there. So it's really better just to have a lawyer look at the deed for you so you can figure out which is the way you're holding it.
Right. And, people's camps, the camps that everyone passes down to this one and then that one and then this one and then that one. Sometimes that gets kind of confusing. You got to sit there for hours almost and say, okay, so this one passed and it went to that one and this one passed and it went to this one. It's not easy.
Right, because with camps, it can be, normally it's split from among the surviving children, but then if one child dies, it can go to the grandchildren. So you could end up having multiple owners of a camp. So one way to deal with that, which I met with a client this week, and we had put the camp into a limited liability company.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it much easier to manage. It's a company that owns it. Your own company that you set up. And then the family members, they can have shares in the company. But if some family members don't want to be a part of the company, they can get out. The other members could buy them out or they could give their shares to the other members. It's a lot easier to manage it that way than with just the deed, because with just the deed, you'd have to file new deeds every time you put a member in or took a member out.
Right, and the problem, too, is a lot of people think that their camp is this great and wonderful thing. Well, it is, as long as mom and dad are paying the bills. That's the thing. You've got your camp, and the kids come every weekend or every other weekend during the summer, and they bring the grandkids, and it's a great time. We love the camp so much. and then you leave it equally to the three kids. You know, one of them lives in California, one lives in the Midwest, and one lives locally. And then you're like, okay, and you guys have to share the expenses. And they're like, well, wait. You know, I only get to use it 1 week a year because I can only get out that way a week. And you've got the person that lives locally that's like, hey, this is awesome. I can go to the camp every weekend. So we have a lot of situations where the other two kids are like, no, you need to buy me out. And the other one's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, sometimes there's a lot of abuse over that. I mean, the best case is if the parents left the children all their money and, you know, they could use that money to buy one share out, right? Mm-hmm. Or if the parents had some money and the children all agreed, they could put that money into an account to pay for the camp expenses. Otherwise, as you said, yeah, you're trying to go around and get the money from each of the members every year. And that could cause some problems if one person can't contribute that year.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't think about it. I have a friend who is an attorney, actually, and they set up a trust. Parents' camp went into a trust, and everything has worked out fine. There was three kids. And there was money, and they redid the camp and everything. So there's no more money in the trust, and now the three kids are contributing, and they've divided it up for the weekends. But now you're at the next generation, right? So whereas there was three kids, now each of these three kids has like three kids. So now you have nine people that are trying to negotiate, you know, nine people plus the original three. So now you have 12 people that are trying to divide up the weeks for the summer. And who's going to start paying the bills, right? Is it going to be the grandkids? Do they have to move up and start paying the money? Or what's going to happen, right?
Right. That's where it gets very difficult. And, I mean, not that an LLC solves all those problems, but it's easier to come up with an agreement in an LLC and make some rules about that, you know. You know, sometimes you see grandkids inherit the camp, but they may live, you know, a couple of hours away, or they may live on the West Coast, and they may not be interested in being a camp owner, right? So, so they could transfer their shares back to the other owners. They could get paid out over time. You know, that you can come up with many different solutions to that.
Yeah, I mean, an LLC is definitely a way to go. And it sounds kind of crazy. People are like, we want a company to own our camp? Yeah.
Right.
It makes it a lot easier to transfer ownership.
Right, it does.
And you can be our next caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We'd love to hear from you. We had that flurry of calls there at the end of the first half hour. We have webinars this week on Wednesday, June 2nd. We have Aging in Place at 10 a.m., and we have How to Plan Your Estate at 2 p.m. So those are great live webinars you can go to, or you can go to our website and watch them on the website.
That's right.
At your leisure.
You can watch them anytime, watch them with your family members. That's right. Take notes.
Fast forward through the parts you don't want to listen to.
That's right. Through some of the glitches, right?
Yeah, and sometimes there are glitches. I know that you had a situation with the one that you did this week, right?
I did. In the middle of it, somehow the PowerPoint had to be, it stopped, and I had to get in and go back to the point where I was. So there's always technical glitches. Well, not
there
always,
is.
But sometimes there are. We're not perfect, so...
No, and sometimes the internet kind of freaks out a little bit, too. I've had that happen where actually the internet went down and everyone was kicked off and we had to all rejoin. It was kind of interesting. I'm like, yep, it's the Zoom curse. What can I say?
Yeah, that's right.
So, again, give us a call, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Whenever the earlier caller was talking about community Medicaid, that's something that we're really doing a lot of right now.
Yes, we are. We are always doing a lot of community Medicaid. You know, it's interesting, I think because of COVID this past year, when people had family members in nursing homes and they couldn't visit them, even in assisted livings where they couldn't visit them, it made people realize how much more valuable home care was. mm-hmm. because at home care, you could still visit your family member. You can control who comes in and out of the house. So, you know, that's a huge advantage to doing home care. You know, besides, people don't want to be in an institution. They'd rather be at home. So, but as much as we talk about community Medicaid, I still get people that I meet with who say, I've never heard of that. That's fantastic, you know? So if you don't know about community Medicaid, definitely watch our Aging in Place webinar where we really get into detail about that. You know, basically, community Medicaid is a program where if you plan correctly, Medicaid will pay for home health aides to take care of you in your house.
And that's what we call it, care on your couch?
That's right. I don't think I've used that in a while, but that's true. Right.
That's Dave. He always says patent pending whenever he says that. But if you're paying privately, and that's what a lot of people don't realize, they're paying privately. They're shelling out a lot of money out of their pocket to pay for home care, and then they come in and say, I don't know what we're going to do. We're out of money to pay for home care, and we want to keep mom home. And we're like, okay, well, we could apply for community Medicaid. And they're like, what? No, we don't want to go into a nursing home. We're like, no, that's chronic care Medicaid, which is in a nursing home. Community Medicaid lets the person stay at home, and Medicaid pays for the care.
Mm-hmm. Right, and people always think that's really, you know, too good to be true. And the good thing about that right now is that there's no look-back period for qualifying for community Medicaid. Yeah, so some people may say, I don't qualify because I have too much money in my name. And that may be true, but you could put your assets into a trust, and then because there's no look-back period, you can apply for and qualify for community Medicaid the following month. And we only have that opportunity to do that through the end of 2021. In 2022, it's changing to a 2.5-year look-back period. So now is the time to do that while there's no look-back period. You can make yourself eligible for community Medicaid, and you could qualify. I'm sorry, and then you could apply this year.
Right, and a lot of people are like, "Really?" And we're like, "Yep, we can transfer your assets this month and apply for Medicaid for next month." And we're working with a lot of people right now to get that done. It's kind of, it's amazing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing the look on people's faces that, you know, you can still keep your loved one home. And you're going to be able to stretch your dollar a lot more because you have Medicaid paying for the care. And then you can use the income, if you want to pay for additional care if you don't get as much care as you need.
Right. Yeah, no, that's right. It's some people say it sounds too good to be true, and it does, but it's perfectly legal. And, you know, I think the reason it is legal because it's cheaper to keep people at home. So if Medicaid is paying for your care, they would rather pay for you to be at home than to pay for you to be in a nursing home, which is more money. So it makes sense for you because that's where you'd rather be. It makes sense for the government because it's cheaper for them to pay for you at home.
True. Very true. And the thing is, people are like, well, we don't need that much help. We don't need that much help right now. And whenever I talk to people, I use Harry's mother-in-law as an example. Whenever she was living at Beltrone, and she only needed like 6 hours a week, right? So help with her meds and just kind of getting stuff together. And by the time she passed away, which she did, she was getting 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. So to go from 6 hours to 70 hours. It's not like you're stuck with that original amount that you qualify for. They're going to keep, you know, getting a reevaluation, and they could increase your hours.
That's right. Yeah, I was meeting with a client yesterday whose mom was, I don't remember if she was 92 or 94, but she, whichever she was just starting to need a little bit of help. But we don't know how fast that will change. So we were talking about just what you said, let's apply for community Medicaid now. When you apply, it can take even about 3 months to get the care in place. But then at least you have it in place, and she may only need a few hours at first. But by the time she's approved, or even in 6 months' time, she may need a lot more care. But at least you have it in place then, so you don't have that waiting period when she does need the care.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And if something happens, we can also do a conversion, because sometimes you can't keep your person home anymore. And we have a situation right now, one of my clients that was on community Medicaid, she got to the point where they can't keep her at home on community Medicaid anymore. And so what we've done is we're actually converting her community Medicaid to chronic care Medicaid because she's going into a nursing home.
Right, yeah. Now, unfortunately, that does happen sometimes, but at least you've done part of the work. When you convert it to a nursing home Medicaid, you do have to provide 5 years of financial records. So that part, you know, has to be done. But you've done the other piece to get the Medicaid documentation in, so now you're just looking at the financial records when you have to switch it.
Right, and there's a lot of paperwork that goes into a chronic care application. And I had a person say to me, well, you know, can I do it myself? You can, and mm-hmm. then you may end up in the situation where you haven't dotted the I's or crossed the T's, and they say, okay, fine, we'll give you Medicaid. Here's your penalty period for, you know, 6 months for the things that you've done, like making transfers and stuff like that, or you didn't give them the correct information that they needed, and then you've kind of shot yourself in the foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I know. So, and sometimes people have made transfers that they forgot about, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't even come up. Or another situation is where the parents may have some cognitive or memory issues, so they can't really tell you why they transferred money. And it's only when the kids are going through the records, or we're going through the records, we see these transfers. So it really helps to have, someone else help you go through all those records who knows the Medicaid rules and can figure out how to present that to Medicaid.
Yeah, I had a situation where the husband had to go into the nursing home, and the wife, she was like, okay, we're going to apply for Medicaid, get some care for my husband. And she brings in all the paperwork, just kind of like brings it in. And I always love it when they come in with grocery bags. They're like, here it is. And so we started going through it. And she really wasn't involved in the family finances, right? I mean, they each had income coming in. Her husband would be like, paying the bills and stuff. Well, apparently the husband was giving money to one of the kids, not all of them. They have like 7 kids, but one mm-hmm. of the kids, he was like giving money to this one son, and she had absolutely no idea. Mm-hmm. And so when we approached her about that, we said, yeah, your husband's made all these transfers and he's not going to qualify for Medicaid. We need to talk to your son and figure out where this money went, if this is money that he can pay back or what we need to do. And she was just absolutely mortified that her husband had given money to one of the 7 kids. And mm-hmm. she was like, I'm just going to private pay because I don't want the other kids to know that he did this.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she had no idea, absolutely no idea, that he had been siphoning money off and giving it to one of the kids.
Well, oftentimes when we do Medicaid applications, it is one spouse who handles all the finances and the other spouse has no idea. And that's, and then they find out what was going on and they're surprised.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, we've probably got time for another caller. If someone wants to give us a call, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We can talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. It's interesting. We really don't talk that much about estate administration, but there's been a lot of, we've had a lot of new estates that have come into the office too.
Yes, that's right. As much as we talk about, trying to avoid probate and, setting up a trust to avoid probate, many clients, when they set up a trust, they're not going to put their checking or their savings account into the trust. So that's still going to go through probate unless you add someone onto that account with you. So it's a really great idea to make sure all of your accounts have beneficiaries on them. At a bank, it's called a TOD or POD.
And that's going to make it much easier to try and avoid probate. Or a lot of people just add their child onto their checking account as a joint owner so they can help them pay their bills when they can't do that anymore.
Yeah. So it's not just planning. And that's the thing, too. Whenever people come in, we look at them and go through the questionnaire. And whenever we do the planning with our clients, we give them ideas as to what they need to do and what they should move. But then their kids come in and they sit down. I've had this, they sit down with me and they're like, okay, so what do they have? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. I can tell you what they had when they came in originally to meet with me 20 years ago, but I can't tell you what they have now. And they're like, well, isn't there, can I just plug their social security number in someplace and everything that they own is going to pull up? And I'm like, yeah, no. Mm-hmm, and right. We look at tax returns, right? A lot of times we can do forensic accounting and do tax returns, but there's a lot of people that don't file taxes because they don't have the income that they have to. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, being prepared and having everything with a beneficiary or a joint or in a trust is definitely the way to go.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But there's always a possibility that you forgot an account somewhere. I mean, many of our clients have life insurance, and you see this, Debbie, right, where if you had mm-hmm. that life insurance, you have shares of stock because they gave you stock shares at one point, and that's something people either, you know, they don't really know about. So it's little things like that that you can forget about that means you have to go to probate. So that's why we always do a pour-over will with our trust. We still have you sign a will that says if I did have anything in my own name when I die, it's going to get added to my trust and get distributed to along with the other trust assets. So it's good to have that as just a backup in case there's something you forgot.
Oh, definitely. And think about this, people, because this is where we see it. Jay Marie was talking about the life insurance policies. A lot of times we see it where people have worked for a company like GE, right? And then they got shares whenever they were working there, and they were individually in their name, and they never put them in a brokerage account, and they still have those shares hanging out in their house, right? And they're individual. I've had to probate estates just to get, you know, the cash in the GE stock or other stocks. Like a lot of people work for banks, and they got bank stock. I've seen that a lot, too, where we've had to go in and probate the will.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sometimes if you're working with your parents, they may not remember or know everything they have. You may not have access to all their financial information. And sometimes there's things that you find after they're gone that you didn't know that they had. You have to take care of it. Right?
Yeah, it's definitely something that the more organized you are, the easier it's going to be for your family.
I still remember a client I had, and we were doing work for his grandmother, and it turned out, I don't remember now how they found it, but she had bonds that were in the basement, like hidden somewhere down there that no one knew about. And then when they found it, they're like, it was a lot of money. They're like, oh my gosh, these bonds just shouldn't be in the basement. The house could go up in fire, right? Or anything could happen.
Yeah, I had a similar situation where the son inherited the house. He was going to rent it out, right? Mm-hmm. So he cleaned out the house. He was all ready to rent it out, and he was doing like a final like swiffering of the wood floors. Right. And he hit the coping around the floor, and it came loose, mm-hmm. and he looked behind it, savings bonds. There were savings bonds behind the coping of, of the entire living room. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to wait and rent this out in another month because God knows if she hid this stuff behind the coping in the living room floor, there's going to be some other stuff hidden in this house. So.
That's right. There is. You can even take time to look through all of that.
So you just never know. People do strange things. They really do. So we're coming up on the end of the show. I don't know if we have time for another caller, but if you want to squeeze it in, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And if you wanted to contact Jay Marie or I or Dave or Harry at the office, the phone number at our office is 518-465-7581. Again, that's 518-465-7581. 865-7581. You can get a hold of Stacy. She's at extension 126, and she can put time on any of our calendars. She has control.
That's right. She's the master scheduler. Right? She decides whether we have lunch or not. You know?
Exactly. It's like, you really didn't need to eat lunch, did you?
So. Yeah, that's right.
So, but we would love to meet with you, and it's a one-hour free consult. If there's a situation where you have a family member that can't make it out to the office, we actually will make house calls, and we do actually go to nursing homes and hospitals when we're allowed to. I guess the hospitals around here are loosening up quite a bit, that they're actually having visiting hours now again.
Yes, yeah, they are. So I was able, as I said, to get in Albany Med to have someone sign a document. I've been to Wesley Nursing Home, so we are able to get out more places. I mean, we still do Zoom signings. I've done Zoom signings at hospitals and nursing homes, and the nursing home, sometimes the staff is really great, and they'll bring the document to the person and then set up a Zoom call with you. So they're really, really helpful, and that's been a godsend when we have to get documents signed and there's no way to get in.
I did one this week at Daughters of Sarah, and they were amazing. They were very, very helpful. We emailed the documents to them. They printed them. They took it down, set up the Zoom signing, and we were able to witness via Zoom, and then they Federal Expressed them back to us. So, I mean, they've been very helpful because they want to do what's best for their clients, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. They understand the limitations of not being able to get in, and they know that we have to get this paperwork done, and that's really important. So definitely. I think Zoom signings may stay around even after COVID. That's my prediction.
I hope so, because there's a lot of people that even if COVID goes away, there's a lot of people that still have immune systems that are compromised that can't go out even if there's not, you know, that. Oh, sounds like it's the end of the show.
That's
have a
right.
Great Memorial Day weekend. Stay dry.
Thanks for spending time with us. And yeah, have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.